following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. You may have noticed that one Whole Foods Market store is not like the other. We're proud that each of our stores has its own quirks, a direct connection to the surrounding community, and buys and sells their own products. Whether it's artisanal chocolates exclusive to Bowery, small batch pickles in Chelsea, or a featured craft beer on tap at West 97th, you'll find that each store is a little bit different than the next. With six Manhattan locations, Whole Foods Market offers a taste of every neighborhood. Come see us in Tribeca, Bowery, Union Square, Chelsea, Columbus Circle, or the Upper West Side. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information, visit www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and I'm going solo today because my co-host, Andrew Invisible Newman, is not here today.
Listeners, if you have any information about the L train from today, give us a call.
497-2128. And by the way, Andrew is riding the L train somewhere in Brooklyn or Queens, and he's missing. But we have Jack Inslee, my producer and my engineer, who's going to fill in for both slots today. Producer, engineer, and co-host.
Andrew, I'm filling in for Andrew.
At the end of the show, I want everybody to write in and let us know how the show was with Andrew. Should we bring Andrew back next week, or should we just keep going flying solo?
It might be better without him. This could be bad for him.
We're going to take an informal survey, and Andrew's going to read the results. Okay, we broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. If you can't listen to us live, all episodes are archived on the website, or free podcasts are available via iTunes, and you can download all the episodes and listen at your convenience. We'd love to hear from you during the show. The phone number again is 718-497-2128. Or you can email, and Jack will get your emails if you go to info@heritageradionetwork.com. And let's hear your comments, your questions, your thoughts, anything you have to tell us. Today's show is Money for Old Folks. We're going to be talking about reverse mortgages. And we had a special guest to come in, and he must be on that same L train with Andrew because he didn't show up either. That L train really must be lost, huh?
I think Andrew knew you were going to do a show about old people, and he pulled the plug.
Yeah, he doesn't like old people. He rants about old people. He thinks he's never going to grow old. But he should tune in because there's some valuable information about me, because I'm on the way to being old one day, and how it affects his inheritance, and he's very interested in his inheritance. So I may spend his inheritance after today's show, and he'll be out completely on his own.
Nice.
Poor Andrew. Poor Andrew. So we're going to do the show without the esteemed mortgage broker, and then we'll have comments. And maybe we can talk about him. We'll talk about him because we'll say things about him at the end of the show and see if he tuned in and hear what people have to say about that. We're going to talk about reverse mortgages. So what is a reverse mortgage? It's the money that you can pull out of your house when you are old, over 62, considered a senior citizen, a retiree. It's money that you have, it's equity that you have in your home. It allows you to draw it out, and you never have to pay it back until after you're dead. Your estate will pay the loan back. It's a very interesting concept. It's been around a while. It's gaining momentum nowadays. You know, there's some people who retire, and they don't have any money. They have, you know, trying to live on Social Security or a small pension. So they're kind of broke, and oftentimes their biggest asset is their house, and oftentimes it's paid off or they have a very low balance on their house, so they will get to tap into that equity while they're still living and never have to pay that mortgage back, like I said, until they're dead. So let's go over some of the things that how you can qualify and get these reverse mortgages and see if it might work for somebody you know, if you have a parent that may want to get some money, or even if you're coming close to retirement or retired, you might find an alternative to getting some money. But there are some pitfalls and caveats. Let's go over them. So it's an FHA program, which means it's federally insured. It's called a home equity conversion mortgage. It's now got its letters HECM. So the government backs it, and how they do that is they insure it in case after you die, the value of the house is less than what you owe on the mortgage, the government will pay the shortage. Thank God for the government.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
They take the loss every time on that?
Well, most people, they don't give you so much value. If your house is worth $500,000, they aren't going to give you a $500,000 loan. They're going to give you less. Maybe they'll give you $250,000. But in a rare case, such as we've experienced the last 2 years, home equity values have fallen so dramatically that there are instances when the loan balances are greater than the home values.
Right.
So it's a very interesting concept.
Then what happens? It's put on the kids or
who? No. The government will pay the shortage to the bank.
Wow.
When you're dead. But there are some questions that I want to raise, and maybe some people can call in and tell us about it. But let's go over it. So it goes like this: you have to be over 62, and you don't have to qualify like credit scores or loan to debt equity values ratios like you do for an ordinary mortgage. Those things don't exist. So it doesn't matter what your credit score is, because it's really based on you're really collateralizing the whole mortgage by your home. So like I said earlier, I don't know the value that they're going to give away, because that's why I brought the mortgage broker in today, but they're not going to give you 100% or even 80%. They're going to give you a lesser percent. And they base the mortgage on a few factors. First of all, how old you are and what the value of your home is in relation to your community, too. They take that into consideration. And if you have a spouse, they take the younger spouse determine how much they're going to give you, because they feel that if you're 87 and taking out a mortgage, their risk is pretty low because you're going to die within a short period of time. But if you're 62 and taking out a mortgage, you might stick around for 25 or 30 years, so they're going to be a long time out there, and their risk is greater. So they like older people, but they do go by if there's a couple, they go by the age of the younger one. So they're going to give you some mortgage, and there's a fee. That's one of the down parts, but it's not the worst. The fee is a 2% fee that they fold into the loan, and then every year you have to pay a fee of 1.25% fee as long as you have that reverse mortgage out there, and they fold that into loan. So here, let's just use an example. You take out $250,000 because your house is worth $500,000. They give you $250,000 cash, and they tack on some fees. So now, instead of paying back the $250,000 when you're dead, you have to pay back the $250,000 plus the fees, plus all the interest that you're not paying as long as that loan is out there. So if the loan is out there for 5 years, interest on a $250,000 loan at the end of 5 years, if you die or you sell the house, then you might owe the bank, let's say, $275,000. So they're going to sell the house for, say, $500,000, and then you owe the bank $275,000, and the rest of the money is yours.
Now, what's stopping old people from taking this money out and then giving it to their kids?
They can do whatever they want with the money.
Really?
They can do whatever they want. But, you know, let me just say, there are rules. Once these loans never get called unless you, A, die. Both people die if they're a couple. B, move out of the house and don't use the house anymore for 12 months, consecutive 12 months. So that happens commonly if someone gets put into a nursing home, or if somebody has, say, a second home in Florida and choose to live down in Florida now, and they're not really using their northern home in New York. So now the house has to, the loan gets called. You have to maintain your own insurance and your own real estate taxes. The bank won't pay that. And if you default on that, then your loan could get called. Or the other thing is you have to maintain the property. You have to make sure that the repairs are, you know, being taken care of, and well, any improvements that need to be done, because the bank doesn't want to get a house that's falling apart and decrepit after a few years. So as long as you maintain those things, real estate taxes, insurance, repairs, and you stay in the house, that loan will never get called. If you leave, you can sell the property. And like I said, if you owe $275,000 and you sell it for $500,000, you pay back the loan $275,000 and the rest of the money is yours. If you choose to take the $250,000 out and you stay there and you want to go on a trip around the world, or you want to put, you know, a jacuzzi and the wildest bathroom in the place, you could do whatever you want with the money. There are no rules. So if you're smart, you could take the money and really make money on it. You could do all sorts of things with this reverse mortgage. There's lots of opportunities. Sometimes old folks are on Medicaid and SSI, which is not the same as Social Security. These are need-based programs. People who take this money and plop it into their accounts may disqualify themselves from Medicaid and SSI. So you have to be careful that if you're in, you know, you're really, you know, on one of those programs, that you don't trip yourself up. The interest rates are often lower on the reverse mortgage than they are for traditional mortgages and home equity loans. Now, some people ask, why would I go get a reverse mortgage if I can just go get a home equity loan? One, a home equity loan probably is cheaper to get. However, a home equity loan, you have to pay it back monthly. And with a reverse mortgage, there is no monthly payment. So there's that freedom that you don't have to worry about if you, you know, you can't afford to pay it back, you don't have enough money, or you're doing other things with the money. So there's those are the favorable treatments for a reverse mortgage. There are various ways you want to take your money. You could take it on a monthly payment. You could take a lump sum. You could take it for a period of time as annuity. You want to take it for the next 12 months or the next 3 years. You can structure the payments in a variety of ways, and the banks will work with you on however you want to do it. The key thing about a reverse mortgage, like I said earlier, you don't can never go upside down, and that's where the government steps in. In the past few years, we've seen a lot of people go underwater, and their mortgages were higher than the value of their homes, and they get stuck. This is not going to happen. The bank's going to help. I mean, the government's going to help you. There's people out there that do these reverse mortgages. There's also creeps out there that do these reverse mortgages, just as there were creeps doing regular mortgages. So be wary of people who promise all sorts of things, charge high fees, don't really get the products that you're looking for, get you maybe other products, because there's probably lots of commissions to be made on some of these reverse mortgages. And there's scams out there. So, and senior citizens, as Andrew will confirm, they sometimes, you know, are maybe too trusting and too believing, and they don't necessarily know what's best for them, especially financially. And if they get ripped off, Andrew ultimately pays with, you know, all the federal programs that we have to help with the senior people, and we know how he feels about that.
That's a trend that's never going to end.
So it's a good program. Now, a lot of senior people want to, they have in their head, this is a long-term thought, they want to leave their assets to their kids, and they won't take the reverse mortgage because that'll impact their inheritance. I am a firm believer in you do not have to leave money to your kids when you die. I think you should live your life, and if your life includes spending all your money or tapping into the equity into your home, so and your kids get less money or no money at the event of your death, that's okay. That's not a requirement when you have kids, is to leave them all this inheritance and estate money. They don't really, it's not required. People as they grow old don't have to live so poorly. They can live a better life. I also do advocate that you really should protect yourself and plan for your retirement. But circumstances are such that, you know, sometimes you don't have enough money for retirement. Andrew would scream that they should just sell their houses and go live in a cheaper place. You could just hear him say that, right, Jack? He would be saying, move out of that house. Don't stay in that house. Move on. Some people do move on, and they downsize, and they reduce their expenses.
But not enough people.
Some people have a hard time leaving for various reasons, and they don't want to do it. So here you have an option. And don't worry about the kids not getting their inheritance. Now, if there is excess equity when you do die, the bank or the realtor sells the property, the kids will get the remaining equity from the house through inheritance. So it's possible. I mean, if you have a $500,000 house and you only owe $250,000 or $275,000, there's still $225,000 to leave to your kids. And frankly, I don't think it's a financial windfall when your parents die.
Now, what about this? What if you owe a lot of money on the house and you're old by chance?
Well, if you owe a lot of money on the house, see, you might not be qualified. This is how it goes. If you have a $500,000 house and you have a $350,000 mortgage, if the bank will loan you more than $350,000 in a reverse mortgage, then you pay off the first mortgage, and now the reverse mortgage is out there, and you don't have to pay that back. But I don't know the loan-to-value that they do give away, but I'm just using a 50% marker. If you owe more than 50% of your value of your house on a mortgage, you may not qualify for a reverse mortgage because the banks don't want to put themselves out there and risk losing too much. So, but here's another one. This is an interesting thing that you could do with a reverse mortgage. If you want to buy a house, and let's say you want to buy a house that is $200,000, and let's use the 50% marker. You could get a reverse mortgage for $100,000 if you have $100,000 of your own cash to buy the place. So, because there's $100,000 of equity. So they will give you a reverse mortgage even to go out and buy a primary home. But it's got to be your primary home. You got to live in it. You got to be over 62. The same rules apply. So it's an option. It's probably not the best option in the world. But as more and more of us baby boomers get older, it may be a normal option for people to tap into their equity and not have to move and to live a more financially sound retired life. So with that, I'm going to thank my invisible guests for not bringing me any information. And we're going to come back in a minute and we're going to do the rest of this.
There are many things that I would be proud of if I'd only invented them, such as the wheel, the washing machine, and the tumble dryer. On these inventions, surely I could retire. I want to retire, no longer required. I want to get by without the man on my back, a tear in my eye with a heart full of pride.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. Flesh Talks Cash. We just finished up retiring and reverse mortgages. And we're going to now swing back into work. You know, Flash does do taxes. She used to do taxes. She's now winding down
used
and not
to.
Doing taxes. She's kind of retired.
That's right.
But she does have an email question this week. Jack's going to read us an email question from a listener.
All right, we got an email question from Noel. And says, as for my daughter's taxes, we do not want them filed. Firstly, I do not want them to find out about these accounts at this time. Secondly, they had no taxable income in 2010, so I doubt the IRS will be looking for them just to file the losses on those two investment accounts. As far as I'm concerned, if they have no income, they are not required under the tax code to file a return. Question for you. Since it's apparent that my wife couldn't take the 2010 losses, when the accounts in question do get drawn on or liquidated, am I correct in presuming that it is my daughters who will pay the taxable gains at their respective tax rates?
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. That went over my head a little bit. You got to translate that for
okay.
us.
Okay. Well, the first thing, the key thing here that people need to know is he was talking about his daughter's taxes. He's got two daughters who were college-age kids or just out of high school. And it seems that they had a couple of brokerage accounts. And they had some transactions in their brokerage accounts. He closed a brokerage account and transferred it to another brokerage account and bought different investments. So what happened was it triggered a taxable event, which that means, let's just say, he owned 100 shares of Apple stock with Morgan Stanley. And he said, I'm going to go to Charles Schwab. And the guy at Schwab said, sell the Apple stock and go and buy Microsoft stock. So the guy did that. So what happens when he sold the Apple stock, and let's say in this case he had a loss, which is pretty hard to do if you have an Apple stock holdings. But let's just say he bought it late and he lost money. So when he sold the Apple stock and took the proceeds from the Apple stock and went to the other company, Schwab, and bought Microsoft stock, he has to pay tax or report the sale of the Apple stock from the first broker. So he thought, since there was a loss there, he doesn't have to file a tax return, and he didn't want the IRS to find out about this account. Well, first and foremost, the IRS knows about this account because all the brokerage accounts have to send information regarding stock transactions. So the IRS is waiting for a tax return. So they know how much you sold the stock for. It's your responsibility to file a return and tell them how much you paid for the stock. And therein lies the loss. So you will owe no taxes. But on their account, they're looking at your account and they say, okay, you had $10,000 of Apple stock sales. And if you don't file a return, we're going to bill you for $10,000. Well, you might have paid $15,000 for the Apple stock, and you have a $5,000 loss, and you pay no tax. So that's why the guy needs to file a tax return, even though there's no tax due. Now, the truth is, the wife thought that she was going to take the losses on her return, but they are completely separate from their daughters. That account is under the daughters, and the daughters have to file their own return. And eventually, that $5,000 loss can be used to offset some income that the daughters may earn down the road. So it's called net operating loss carryforward, or capital loss carryforward. So there was a lot of information in there, and there's a lot of technical stuff in there. But whenever you sell stock, regardless of what you do with the money, put it into a different account, take a trip around the world, buy a new couch, you have to report that to the government, even if you have a loss. So that's the short and long answer of that question.
Nicely done.
Okay, so today Jack is going to really, really stretch his brain and do some number nuts for me. I got some tough ones.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think I do better at this than Andrew anyway.
All right, well, we're going to see if you get frustrated like he does.
What do you got?
Okay, we know that there are taxes that we pay all the time, but there is also hidden taxes in the form of fees and tariffs. And I'm going to test you and let you and tell you, give you some good information as to how much taxes in the form of fees and tariffs that you actually do pay.
This one's going to piss me off, isn't it?
I think so. It's going to First of all, I want you to know that when they import certain goods, there's a lot of tax or tariffs. We'll call them tariffs. And I'm just going to give you an idea of the kind of numbers we're talking about. They're pretty big. Bicycles come from abroad, 30% tariff. Infant formula, 30% tariff. Flashlights, I don't know why, 125% tariff. Brooms, 32% tariff. Hammocks, 14%.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it gets bad. Peanut butter, 132%.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is only on imported goods.
This is on imported goods. So now,
you got to buy domestic peanut butter,
Now here we go. Yeah, domestic peanut butter. You know what? They do that to raise the price to try to make our domestic products
look better,
comparable,
yeah,
at least,
wow,
because that's how cheap it is to
Sad.
Make some of these things.
Sad.
So now I'm really going to test you and ask you what percentages do you think that you're paying on various things?
Oh, boy.
All right? So first, you want to go on an airplane flight, right? How much tax do you think is on a domestic ticket? Is it, let me see, what do I have here? 10%, 7.5%, or 5% tax on a domestic ticket?
10%, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, it's 7.5%.
7.5%, all right.
Yeah, okay. Now, there's also another tax for each segment of the flight since September 11th, terrorist attacks, right?
What does that mean? Each segment?
Each segment. So, I don't know. I think if you take a trip, if you're going to California and you stop from here to St. Louis and then you get on a plane from St. Louis.
So, you pay more if you got a connecting
flight.
So, you pay,
correct, segments. So, what do you think the tax is for each segment of a flight? Is it $3.70? Is it $5.20? Or is it $7.70?
This is on top of the 7.5%?
On top of the 7.5% tax.
$5.
Well, it's $3.70. And then we're not finished. Now, we have a security charge on every segment. Okay.
Do they tell you this when you
Well,
pay?
Did you ever buy a ticket? They advertise the price at $199, and by the time you finish paying the fees and the taxes, you're up to $245.
No.
Yeah, go buy a ticket. It's outrageous. So they have a security tax charge. How much do you think it is? Is it $2.50? Is it $10.50? Or is it $20?
Wow. I was hoping $250.
All right. $250 is the number. Well,
all
now
right,
after they
good.
Slammed you on every tax
really.
And everything, okay? Now we're going to go into, you're going on vacation, you paid all these ridiculous fees to fly there.
This is a domestic flight we took, too.
We took a domestic flight. That's right.
Right, because it's probably more money.
Oh, my God. The international. Oh, yeah. There's international arrival taxes. I forgot to mention that. $16.30 for international arrival tax and $16.30 for international departure tax.
Someone's got to pay for all this stuff.
Yeah. So when you see those advertised flights, you know that you're going to be in for a lot more on top of that. So let's say you're going on vacation and you plan on going fishing while you're going on vacation, okay? Fishing isn't free either, all right? A fisherman pays how much percentage of sales tax on top of his equipment? Does he pay an additional 10%, 20%, or 25% tax?
You mean additional sales tax, so he's paying the regular sales tax, and then there's more on top of it?
A fisherman pays a percentage of the sales price of sporting goods equipment. Yeah, on top of the sales tax, because this tax is really a federal tax, I think.
It's a federal sports tax?
Federal sports tax.
Weird.
10, 20, or 25%, Jack?
I hope it's 10%.
It's 10%. Right. That's outrageous.
It's still crazy, though.
Outboard motors.
You would think they want to encourage people to do sporting things, no?
I can't. It gets worse. Outboard motors and tackle boxes are taxed on top of the ordinary stuff.
What's
on top? Okay, I don't know why they're after the fishermen. I guess 3%, 6%, or 8%. Do you think you pay additional tax
on a tackle box?
On a tackle box or an outboard motor?
3%.
3%. That's right.
All right.
Now, when that was, let's leave fishing and you become an archer, right? How much do you think
archery?
How much do you think the feds tax each arrow, the shaft, right? Is it 45 cents, 90 cents, or $4.50 per shaft?
90 cents.
45 cents. Okay.
All right.
Oh, but wooden arrows are exempt, so you're better off going with the wooden arrows, okay? Now we got handguns. Handguns. We're going to now go to the shooting. We're going to hunting.
Well, I hope these are taxed a lot.
They're taxed. Oh, so you believe that the hunter should pay, the fishermen shouldn't pay, and the archers shouldn't pay.
You know what? I guess I see the logic behind all three.
Okay. They're saying these are luxury sports here. You're going to pay.
The fishermen are taking our fish supply.
The guns, though, that's
a whole other game.
Right. Okay, here we go. Now, buyers of handguns, how much do you think they pay additional to the feds for their... It's like an excise tax, a luxury tax.
Right.
5%, 10%, or 15% for a handgun?
15%.
It's 10%.
It should be 15.
Okay, now ammunition. How much do you think they charge, federal government charges for ammunition?
More for ammunition.
I got to tell you, I got these choices. We got 10, 11, or 12%?
12.
11%.
All right.
All right, now, we gave up on sporting goods because we were just disgusted, and we're going to go and enjoy our life. We're going to drink, and we're going to smoke. So now we got cigarettes, right?
No, I know too well about this.
Cigarette, you smoke, right? No. All right, the federal government's tax on cigarettes until February 2009 was 39 cents. It went up.
Wow.
It went up. How much did it go up to? Is it 76 cents? Is it $1.01 or is it $1.51?
I think it's $1.51.
Well, it's $1.01 per pack.
Okay. Now, that's just the federal tax.
That's the federal. And then each state
goes crazy.
And each state, and I'm going to give you an example of some of the states. Missouri, they have 17 cents a pack. Virginia has 30 cents a pack. New York, $4.35 a pack. And Rhode Island has $3.46 a pack.
Oh, boy.
Boy, it doesn't pay to go.
And you can't even smoke anywhere in New York now.
Now you can't smoke in the park. Right. It's hopeless.
So
it's hopeless.
You can't smoke. You go outside of the bar to have a cigarette. Where are you going to go?
So now they've taken away all the fun in life, all the sporting goods,
and all the smoking.
And we know that there's all sorts of taxes on liquor, too, right? So here we're going to leave that arena, and we're going to go to the vaccines for these kids. We're talking about diphtheria, tetanus shots, childhood vaccines. How much do you think the feds tax per shot?
What?
They tax the family. The DPT.
Get out.
So we have either 75 cents, $3, or
$5.25. 75 cents.
Well, there you go. Isn't that a bargain? Okay.
Yes.
And so, and then we have a couple more here. Here's a good one. The federal government rarely collects this one, but there is a tax on unauthorized wagering bets. Okay?
What's
unauthorized?
So if I make a bet with you right now that Andrew won't be here next week.
Right. And
they want to collect a tax.
We
got
it. Once we report the winnings.
Yeah, who's reporting?
Right,
anything?
Exactly.
Nobody.
That's it. But there's a tax on, although it's hardly ever collected, but there's a tax on unauthorized wagering. So it's either 2%, 5%, or
10%. 10%.
Well, it's 2%.
It's 2%.
And that's how they often get criminals, okay? They get them on this. They said, you had unauthorized wagering and betting, and we're going to get you for the tax.
Know?
Well, that's how they build their case. They don't necessarily, they can't always prove that you have done some criminal behavior. But if they have some sort of a, if you have a gambling cartel, you know, you have a gambling business, you know, they can get you for not paying the tax on that.
I see.
And legally, there's a 0.25% tax on every bet you place.
I'd like to see someone call into our show that's reported these off the book.
Well, I think
winnings.
I've told you this before. You know, if you're a prostitute or a drug dealer, if you the government wants you to report your earnings. And so if you report your earnings and pay your taxes, you're not going to get in, you're not going to get caught for income tax evasion. Of course, you'll get caught for, you know, criminal behavior because it's illegal to be a prostitute and it's illegal to be a drug dealer. But you will not be in trouble for income tax.
Wow,
and that's
well,
how they get the gangsters.
Big
Al Capone
deal.
And all those boys always went away
big
because
deal.
Income tax evasion. So that's the end of our show. Kind of depressing, isn't it? We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be back with some more bodies in the studio, and we'll have some more positive information to give you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Just Food. Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This little nugget comes from Food Safety News, which is a blog that you can get every single day if you want to sign up for it. I love it. And in this one, it says, in what qualifies as ground-shifting news in the food safety world, the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Tuesday lopped 15 degrees off of its recommended temperature for safely cooking whole cuts of pork, aligning it with guidelines already in place for beef, veal, and lamb. Heating steak, roasts, and chops to an internal temperature of 145 degrees Fahrenheit, so long as the meat sits briefly before it's eaten, is enough to ensure its safety, the USDA said. This latest revision for pork comes again on the advice of the FSIS, which is the Food Safety Inspection Service, which says cooking cuts of pork to 145 degree Fahrenheit with a 3-minute rest is as safe as cooking them to 160 degrees, the previously recommended temperature with no rest time. So now you can have a little bit of pink, juicy pork, even if you're buying commodity pork, which should vastly improve its taste and eating quality. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it, though. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you.
Ah.
But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it. You know?
I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts
were gone. You hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.